great to have you listening in and spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Network. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We begin the show by talking about tools that are available for tracing your ancestry, including a couple of workshops coming up at the Wisconsin Historical Society. And our guest back with us once again, Lori Bessler. Lori, the genealogy and local history specialist in the Society's Library, Archives, and Museum Collections Division. As we talk with Lori, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you're wondering how to get started searching your family's history. Maybe you've hit a dead end and need some help. Join the conversation. The number to call is 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Lori Bessler, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. It's good to be back.
So you've been doing this a while. What do people gain from learning more about their family history, do you think?
That's a good question. I think some people find peace. Understanding more about the previous generations can kind of help you understand the generation you're closest to, like your parents or your grandparents' generation. I think a lot of people research it to find out, you know, basically, you know, what am I made of? Where do my people come from? What history am I connected to? It makes history a little bit more interesting for some people. I think there's a wide range of why people research their family history.
Do you think there are some common misconceptions that people might hold about genealogy?
Oh, yes, definitely. And they're being amplified with some of the products that are out there. You know, when you look at the commercials about DNA and how it can just show you everything about you. And it's like, it's just one tool in the toolbox. It's not everything. So yeah. That's definitely one of those misconceptions. Another one is that everybody came in through Ellis Island and no, and they did not change names at Ellis Island. And there's a lot of different misconceptions that we help people to understand the background of. And then it makes it a little easier for them to research their own direct family.
And where do you start? If you want to say, okay, I'm going to research my family's history, where do you begin?
Everybody starts with what they know. You know, they start with a chart and they write themselves down. They write down their parents, the names of their grandparents. You start filling in the dates, born, married, died, places, and you have those right away, then people like me, a historian or a librarian, can help you identify, okay, well, you have yourself born or your parents were born before 1950. Let's find them in the 1950 census and see what that document shows us that should tell you a little bit more about your parents and about your grandparents and so on. So using censuses, vital records, that all comes as a second step after you actually identify what you already know. Talking to family members. This is certainly the time period we had opportunities, many of us had opportunities to talk to our relatives and start hearing those stories again. You start thinking, okay, I wonder if that story is true or not. So that all comes around this time of year. So, yeah, you start with yourself.
You mentioned a public record like the census is certainly a public record. Yeah. Are there other public records that and how do we access them?
Right. So you know what is that there's lots of pieces to all of our paper trails. Each one of us has left a paper trail already. When you're born, you started a paper trail. And so public records are usually those that were created by governments. Sometimes they're like newspapers. They're mostly public. So there's a lot of different types of records. What I usually tell people is it's a good idea to start with three types of records. One are the censuses, especially if you're dealing with United States ancestry. The censuses were done 1790 to the present, and we have all of those available 1790 to 1950. Every 10 years, the federal government, asked us questions, and those vary from every year. They change the questions, and there's some similarities. The second type of record are vital records, birth, marriage, and death records. And mostly I'm talking about civil records. So So those are records that are, you know, created at mostly at the county courthouse, except in the east, a lot of times it's created at the town town hall. And then also many in the, times in the state vital record office will create that. And then the third type is what most of us, I think, are more used to, and that's our obituaries. And so many times we have experienced some death in the family, in which case most likely you've either read an obituary or you actually helped to write someone's obituary as well. So those three types of records give you so much data and starts you on the next level of, wait, it says in the obituary they served in the military. Now what do I find out about them? What's that paper trail like?
Oh.
Or they were a homesteader. There's land records. What's that paper trail like? So,
are there vital records such as Uncle Bill got arrested for this or that?
Those would be court records. So, yeah, court records that are a little bit different than vital records, but a lot of times those are accessible. They're just not accessible online. And that's where a lot of our, that's another big misconception out there, is that all I have to do is go to sites like Ancestry and it's going to tell me everything. And it really doesn't. And so you need to look at what is the paper trail and where is that located? And then maybe, hey, maybe that part of this is online.
We'll take some calls. Lori Bessler, our guest from the Wisconsin Historical Society, great to have her back. And you can join in with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. George in Rice Lake, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
So, hey, thanks for taking my call. I actually just started doing my own Ancestry stuff about 3 weeks ago, so perfect timing. So I went on Ancestry.com, and my question is, as I'm listening to you, it is really hard to find all that extra family information, things people tell you that isn't a public record. So now that I've built this out like 10 generations back on Ancestry.com and I have more questions than answers, how do I take that and start adding that family lore, the stuff that you can't find online? How do I add that in? Where do I take that information? What do I do?
Right. So where are the stories, in other words? Where are those stories hiding? They're not always spelled out on vital records or other types of records like that. Certainly talking to current generations that are still living, being able to ask them about some of the generations to see if they know anything, taking it an ancestor at a time and looking at what you know about that ancestor, where did they live, when did they live there, and what was going on in that location at that time. So putting them into historical perspective. There are things like local history books and published genealogies that had been published back in, you know, the late 19th century, early 20th century. Many of those we have at Wisconsin Historical Society. And those are listed in our online catalog, which is the catalog for the UW library system. There's also talking to reference librarians like myself. One of the services we provide is a consultation, a free consultation that I do with people by phone, in person, or via Zoom, so that I can look at what you have identified. We can identify, is this valid information, or do we need some more backup documents to verify it? And what other records are there to be found? I could spend the next 45 minutes just listing off all the different types of records out there, and I wouldn't be able to explain each one. So there's so much that I can help a person one-to-one, but a big part of it is take one person at a time.
And how would George or anybody else reach you or the Historical Society?
So our email, asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. So if you email that, a request for consultation will get to me, and then we schedule that and, you know, discuss if we want that by Zoom. A benefit is that then I can share a screen and be able to show you how do I use FamilySearch.org and how do I use Ancestry.com and what do I find on MyHeritage? And you said your catalog is what? What does that look like? And so Zoom calls or Zoom meetings are a lot easier. phone calls are possible too if people do not like to use Zoom or if they don't have internet access easily accessible. And then in person is definitely a possibility as well.
So give me that address again. Ask
library at wisconsinhistory.org.
I'm writing
it down. If you go into our website, wisconsinhistory.org, and you go to the box Research Your Family History, you'll find that email address as well.
Ah, okay. And we can, Clara may already have posted that up on our site, ideas at wpr.org/Larry under program notes. We'll put it in there if we don't. She's getting it up right now, she tells me.
And those consultations are free. They usually last an hour, but I will tell you, sometimes I really get pulled into these stories. So sometimes they've gone a little longer.
George, there you go. I hope that helps. Appreciate your call. Let's take another call. Joe in Northwest Wisconsin, your turn.
Yeah, hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm trying to research my great-grandparents who used to live in Dresser, Wisconsin. And they were there in 1940, but it was a small village. So the exact place where they lived, there's no addresses listed in the census. So I'm trying to find out the exact piece of property that they lived on. What would you recommend I research? What resource would be good for that?
So do you have a sense that they owned their property?
Yes, in the census, it says that they owned it.
Okay, well, that's a good sign, because when they bought that property, they created the paper trail, which is a deed. That was created at the County Register of Deeds office. In which county is Dresser in? I've heard of Dresser.
It's Polk County.
Polk County, okay. So you would contact the Register of Deeds. Now, remember I mentioned earlier, you identify what is the paper trail first, so it's a land deed, and who created it? The County Register of Deeds. Now, the next question, is that possibly online? So the place I go for land deeds is familysearch.org. That is the website for the Latter-day Saints, and they have gone, since the 1930s, I think it is, they started putting these public records that we've been talking about onto microfilm. Well, now all their microfilm has been digitized. And you have to set up an account with them. It's free. It's very easy to set up an account, but that allows you to see these documents that they have actually digitized. Now, that does not mean every single land deed is on familysearch.org. There's a process. You have to go into the catalog. You have to find out if they actually got permission from that clerk at the county to have that digitized. So if they did not, then it's that you would go to the county courthouse and look up that land deed. That land deed will tell you a description of the land down to the township, range, and section, or the lot and block number within a town.
Wow. Joe, I hope that helps. Thanks a lot.
If it doesn't, like I said, there's a lot of detail. And if it doesn't, definitely consultations will help.
Yeah. Joe, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Bessler, our guest today, genealogy and local history specialist in the Wisconsin Historical Society. It's great to have her back. Clara Neipert is our producer today. Trino LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ideas Network, talking in a way about history, maybe your family's history, and I hope you'll join us on Thursday of this week. We'll be talking to Clint Smith, author of How the Word Gets Passed. It's our award-winning book. It looks at how the world remembers slavery, but also how often it forgets about this part of our history, or the information that we get is not really correct. You can read the book and join the discussion on Thursday from 11 to noon. So I'm looking forward to it. It's a great book. Right now, we'll take your genealogy questions as we visit with Lori Bessler genealogist with the Wisconsin Historical Society. Kay in Madison, we'll give you a chance to join in.
Good morning. I have done a lot of my family genealogy, and three really good sources are a website, findagrave.com, 25,000 volunteers research local graveyards, and that's the way you can find your ancestors before the 1790 census. And then 1876, a lot for the centennial, a lot of families and counties did their whole history. So that's how I found my mother's Illinois counties. And then in 1976, I found my grandmother in Nebraska. It was a well-known family because they were very activists, and there's a photograph of her. So those are, and then military records. I found my cousin in Ohio who was a female who disguised herself as a man and enlisted in Company A, 17th Ohio during the Civil War.
Hmm. Wow. Interesting information. Lori, a comment on Kay's suggestions.
Yes, they're definitely wonderful suggestions. The Find a Grave site is an interactive site. You can join Find a Grave and have an account with them so that you can post documents, digital images of documents and photos. Each person who is on that site has a memorial page, and that page is a great place where people have been sharing each other's research. You can also link one memorial page to another person's memorial page, meaning if I had my father's page up, and I could link to both of the pages for his two parents. And so that makes it easier for the next generation or the other people looking for information. You'll be able to say, okay, yeah, well, here's all of his siblings. Here's all of the memorial pages for his children, for everything. So it's a great website. And then, yes, the county histories and family histories that, all over the place. And Wisconsin Historical Society is very unique in a way. As a state historical society, we collect from across the United States, not just Wisconsin. So we probably have the books that you had talked about, Kay. So the Nebraska book and in Ohio and everything. So, yes, wonderful resources.
Kay, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Deborah in Winona, Minnesota. Deborah, hello.
Hello. I am wondering how I can find out about adoption records from the 1870s in Wisconsin. My grandfather was apparently adopted, and so I've come to a dead end there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Well, so with adoption, for that time period, it could have happened three different ways. One is a very informal, hey, his parents died and someone else took him in. No paper trail was created. We hope it's not that situation. But if you look at if it was a civil adoption, meaning the government was pulled in, there should be civil court records that were created at the county clerk's office in that county in which he was adopted out of. It may not even have been the county he was born in. So it's, tracking that might be a little bit difficult if you don't know exactly where he lived. And then the third way is through churches. They often handled adoptions as well. Again, very informal, sometimes documented in the church records. And so if we're talking about that time period, number one, was there a civil birth record that could have a notation on it? And number two, where was he born and where are the clerk of court records for that area? Again, that is something that we can help identify, especially for Wisconsin. And some of those clerk of court records do end up on Family Search, but not as many as you would think. And so it might be working with either the state archives, which we are for the state of Wisconsin, or at the county level.
Interesting. Deborah, thank you so much for calling. Ann in Stevens Point, on to you. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. I have an extensive tree on Ancestry, and I just want to caution people. Your first caller, I think, said he had something like 10 generations of his ancestors in 3 weeks. And the thing I caution you is don't just take stuff off of Ancestry or other websites unless there's documentation there. So such as you see the census records or the church records, to make sure you're actually reporting the correct people. A lot of people have the same name, and if you just copy something, it could easily be somebody who's not your ancestor. And if you just go ahead with that, you're just perpetuating mistakes. So it's important, A, to document your work, and B, if you're looking at other people's work, to make sure it's documented before you just assume they're talking about your ancestors.
Ann, thank you very much for calling. Comments, Lori?
I totally agree. Totally agree. And my little alarms went off in my head as well with the first call. But understand that when you're first starting, of course, it's exciting when you find another person's tree. And it's like, oh, my gosh, they got me back another five generations. What you do with that information is, like I said, you take it one person at a time. And you're looking at that one person and saying, okay, do I really believe that birth date? And yet they got married at age 10? That doesn't match at all. I need more verification on that. For those that are pointing out right easily, in the beginning. Otherwise, I would suggest you can use all of those clues. And Dick Eastman, who's an internationally known blogger, who has a very popular blog out there talking about genealogical research, he just came out with a blog entry just within the last month telling people you don't disregard those other people's trees. You use them as hints. You don't add them necessarily to your tree, but you gather their information as possible leads. And then Anna's right. You look for the actual records. You try to find that birth record. You find a church record if there is no civil birth record. Maybe there's a baptismal record. You maybe reach out to those people. If you belong to Ancestry and you have a tree there, other people can contact you and you can share that research. And so, yes, online trees, there's a lot of them out there besides just on Ancestry, and a lot of them have misinformation in there. So you want to verify it.
Ann, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. We've got open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. And speaking of emails, a listener emailed with a question. They have an idea of the counties their Irish ancestors came from, but they can't get any further. Any ideas where they go next? There are websites, but they are so expensive.
Oh, it is. It can be very expensive to do this research. But there are shortcuts, too, that's for sure. So looking at when you look at the immigrant in your family, you look at their paper trail, starting with their time here, and then go backward. So when they came over here, did they become a citizen? Because if they did, their declaration of intention and their petition for naturalization, those two pieces of paper have a chance of saying a town in a county in the old country that they came from. And so that's kind of where you're going to start with. If you've already looked for that, and the censuses, by the way, if that immigrant ancestor lived past 1900, those 1900, 1910, 2030, those later censuses ask the question, did you become a citizen? How far did you go through the process? So there are clues in those censuses, and that's another reason you use censuses first. Their obituary. Did the immigrant and his wife make it to 50 years? Did that have something in it that explained where in Ireland they came from or in Germany or wherever? Did their obituary have something in there to say it? So you look at all of those clues. Then you can also work with institutions like the Ulster Historical Foundation. They are the group that are coming over in March to provide a workshop for us, and they're going to give a full-day workshop. They are wonderful in explaining what the record trail is, the paper trail, and where you're going to find it, websites to use, and institutions to contact. And so that workshop on March 18th, especially if you're looking at Ireland, is going to be very helpful.
And how do people get information on signing up for that?
Right. So on our website, again, under WisconsinHistory.org, you go to our events calendar. It's right at the top of the screen. It says events. You click that, and it'll take you to all of the events that are being held by the Wisconsin Historical Society. And there's so much, not just for genealogy, of course, but all aspects of families and history and all of it. We offer so many programs. Then on the left side of it, you can actually isolate those that have to do with genealogy. Right now, there's two of them listed, one in March and then one I'm giving in June. We also will have two others posted soon, one for April 22nd that will be Lee Grady, who is our lead archivist up in our archives. He will be talking about archival collections like institutions, schools, prisons, all kinds of archival materials for genealogists. And then May 13th, we have a full day on military records. And we're having Russ Horton, who's with the Wisconsin Veterans Museum, provide a program on that. And so those events will show up in the events calendar, and you can they'll be, once registration opens, which I'm hoping is in the next couple of weeks, then you can go ahead and register online.
Excellent. And we can mention those again perhaps later. David in Deep Haven, Minnesota is up next with a comment. Hi, David.
Hi, and being a Minnesotan, I'm really impressed to hear about this wonderful service you have in Wisconsin. I happen to be Norwegian, and coming from a country that hasn't been disrupted by major wars over time, we can go back to 803 AD or CE because the family is still on the same property. But that's probably is the same way. But I'm just curious why 23andMe hasn't been mentioned. We've used both Ancestry and 23andMe, and we've had much better information from 23andMe than we did from Ancestry. And I'm just wondering if there's a philosophical difference here, or if you could just help me understand.
You know what is that? At the Wisconsin Historical Society, what we do is we mostly focus on the paper trail. And so 23andMe, Ancestry, MyHeritage, Family Tree DNA, they all work with DNA as well. That's not to say that our staff doesn't work with people with their DNA results, but most of the time we're focusing on the paper trail. With DNA testing, I will make a couple of points here. One is when you go to do your DNA testing at one of these sites, there's two reasons people do this. One is the ethnicity estimate, and I know, Larry, you've had Mary Eberle on to discuss DNA and genealogy before. The other aspect is you connect with other people who share DNA with you. The sharing the DNA is what we've helped people find more useful. The ethnicity estimate is what changes so much depending on how each of these companies determine the ethnicity according to what their pools are, okay, what people have actually tested. It's very scientific, and it changes. Their ethnicity estimates change. So, like I said, what we usually do is focus on who are the matches, who are other people who have done testing on these sites who you could then contact and say, hey, I'm doing genealogical research too. What kind of paper trail have you uncovered? What kind of paper trail can I share with you? And so that's why I did not go into 23andMe.
Yeah, and it's a different service. In terms of how they do their work. David, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Hannah in Madison called but couldn't stay with us. She's wondering how epigenetics tie into ancestry.
Epigenetics.
I don't know what that is, to be perfectly honest.
Well, genetics must have to do with the DNA. And so, that's probably a better question for Mary Eberle.
I'm sorry we can't help you out on that, Hannah. Appreciate the question, though. Carrie emailed. She stalled once she got to as far as ancestors from French Canada, one of it which had some Native American heritage. All the records for churches were in French. She did contact the tribes in northern Wisconsin about the half Native American grandma that she has. She has a picture of her. Her first husband was a Civil War militia member who died of battle wounds, she thinks, with the 14th Brigade. And I guess she's wondering what she's stalled and where does she go from here as far as ancestors from French Canada, one of whom was Native American heritage, had some.
Right. You know, one of the things is that we have four classes each fall and each spring. This next fall of 23, we're going to have a full day on French Canadian research, ironically. Oh. And so that'll be coming up. So anyone who does want to be notified of any of the workshops we have coming up in the years, coming up in the next seasons and everything, they can just email Ask Library. With this researcher, it might be worth it to have a consultation so that I can talk to them about which nation are we talking about, Indigenous nation, and then also what locations in Canada and what locations in the United States to help identify where is the paper trail and what paper trail exists.
So Carrie should go to Ask Library at WisconsinHistory.org and arrange for a consult. That makes very good sense. Well, let's go to Jim in Boston next. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Say, I have a fourth great-grandfather from Ireland who probably was thumped over the head and thrown on a British ship sometime around 1814 or so. And he fought for the British in the War of 1812. When he got closer to the shore, he jumped ship and fought for the Americans after that. We know he was in the Battle of Plattsburg. And I just can't go any further back. I suppose, I mean, he probably didn't do any paperwork when he got to America, but I can't find anything further back from about him in Ireland.
Ah, okay. Well, so the paperwork over here, if he fought in the war, did he get a pension?
Yes, he did, I believe.
And did you get the pension from the National Archives?
I'm not sure where we got the pension. I do have family records. We've had reunions since about the late 1800s. So,
I think it's the same situation. If we can have a meeting between you and I where we can talk about, okay, what, when you say you have family records, what are the family records so that we can do an inventory and say, okay, what you're missing are these pieces of the paper trail, and this is where you're going to find them. If he fought in the military, it's possible he gained citizenship. We have to look at the laws at the time. And then also, what about his obituary? What about other types of parts of his paper trail? And so that's where I would try and have a meeting with you and say, okay, let's look at what's the new research plan that we can come up with.
There you go, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ed from Northern Illinois called, couldn't stay with us, but he said the Mormons have family search centers with free access to databases, and they've helped him a lot. You've certainly commented on that yourself. Diane in Cameron emailed us with a comment. She says another way to find out land ownership is through old plat books. Many libraries and county seats carry them.
Yes, plat books, you can find a lot of them on our website as well. We've digitized quite a few, and so you can do that. And then also, plat maps are kind of, they're published every now and then. They're not a consistent kind of thing. The land deeds are the legal documentation for that specific purchase of that land. There's also Sanborn fire insurance maps, which were done mostly, we're talking like 1885 or so to about 1920 something, maybe into the 30s, with some updates. Sanborn fire insurance maps were done for an insurance company, but they do list addresses and they show where, what was around in that location, what kind of buildings were there, that kind of thing. So maps are certainly used along with land records.
You know, you mentioned several of your upcoming workshops, which is great, but I think I'm correct in saying the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society Conference is March 24th and 25th of this year. What usually happens at that conference?
So the Wisconsin State Genealogical Society holds two events each year, and they are different than us, but we are very friendly with them. They're wonderful people, and they work really well with providing educational opportunities. So their website is wsgs.org. What they do is in the spring, they have a two-day conference, and that has one main speaker and then some different people who are doing like a one-hour talk at different times during the two-day period. So it's a longer conference. They also have a conference in the fall that's a one-day workshop with a pre-conference event in the day before. And so they have nationally known speakers. They have state speakers. They have local. So it's a great opportunity to learn from the speakers, but also for networking with different organizations that are vendors and with other researchers who you just sit next to and start a conversation with.
That's pretty cool. Colleen in Cumberland emailed us, how can she find where her grandfather was stationed in World War I? Is there a website that can tell her this?
Were they, was she, and this is an email, so she probably doesn't have a...
Yeah, it's an email.
Yeah, so it would depend on which state we're talking about, but a lot of times with World War I, I direct people to the state archives for whatever state the person was living in at the time. Because they may have, like Wisconsin, we have what are called bonus cards, and that's going to help us. It's an archival collection of military records created at the time that helps us identify the unit. You need the unit in order to find out where did that unit, where were they stationed, where did they go, what conflict did they see.
And finally, Barb emailed us. She says one thing she learned when researching their Czech grandmother's records from the early 1900s is that while she did not speak English, the people at Ellis Island on the early census takers did not speak Czech. And so her name, Josephine, could be recorded as Josephina, Joseph, and then another spelling for Josephina, Yosef, and so on. She had to get creative with the spelling and then verify with other information in the record.
You know, it's interesting. One of the first questions you had, Larry, was what are some of the misconceptions about genealogy or something like that? And our names being spelled the same way throughout our whole paper trail is one big misconception because a lot of people are writing that name down as we say it. And so that person may not speak that certain language. They may not have heard you correctly. All of the, so many possibilities. And so when you look at your family, sometimes I've been able to break through the brick walls. One of my go-to strategies is to look without a name and put other pieces of information about that person in the search engine. That's a birth time, a year of a place of birth. If it's a small town, it's easy to do. If it's like Chicago, not so much. But there are different strategies. Names could be misspelled for sure.
Lori, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it, and we'll look forward to your next visit.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Larry.
Lori Bessler is the genealogy and local history specialist in the Wisconsin Historical Society's Libraries, Archives, and Museums Collections Division. She's always got lots of, she's always excited to talk, and she knows a lot. So it was great to have her back. Coming up, we're going to take a look at some of Wisconsin's historic theaters. We have some dandies in this state, and Jim Drager is going to be with us to talk about some of them. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.